N4HAJC, N4HHC. Okay, well, I really appreciate chatting with you, Jerry, and looking forward to maybe getting some more help here. And I will send you an email and, you know, be taking a look at that, seeing if we can't make some progress. And I use, do you use a handheld mic, or does that eliminate the being able to hear it while you transmit? Over.
My handheld, because I don't have, neither one of my handhelds are duplex. They're half duplex and not full duplex. It doesn't matter with that. But now on the D72, I think what a lot of people use on those is they use that one of the speaker mics. And I think one of the Kenwoods has a little outlet. You know, one of the speaker mics has an outlet for like an earphone. And some people use that. That way you don't hear, you don't have that feedback coming into your microphone from the speaker. That's the issue with full duplex. You gotta have some isolation between the speaker and your microphone, and the handheld microphone seems to work real well with those. In order for it to work better, I think you have to plug some type of headset or something into that little two or two and a half millimeter plug in on that Kenwood hand mic.
You're right about that. I do have one that has a little mini on there. So for headphone, that's a good idea. All right, I'm gonna back out here, Jerry. But it's been great chatting with you. And didn't mean to run Dave off, but I think he's listening, and I'm gonna have to get him to help me with. The Sky Command and the crossband repeat on this TS-2000 sometime. So, anyway, good to chat with you, and thanks a lot, Jerry. N4HHC.
Anytime, Warren, and when you're talking today, if you're talking to one of the smartest guys in the building, in my opinion, he knows he's got a lot of great ideas, and he's working on something more important than the radio right now, but he knows his stuff. You won't go wrong listening to anything he's got to say. And I'd be glad to help with anything I can. And hopefully this thing's going to ease up a little bit. I live in Anderson, but when this quarantine thing goes over, I usually spend a couple of days in Greenville keeping my grandkids a week. Maybe we'll start that up in another few weeks. But I'd be glad to help anyway I'm able to. But good talk with you. Have a great afternoon. N4HHC, N4DJC, clear.
Hey, Warren, you didn't run me off. I was listening. I got me a cup of coffee now, so I'm doing better. I had to work all night last night and haven't been up that long. But anytime you can get a chance to listen to Jerry talk about satellites, it's going to be fun. Anyway, W4DJW.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't run you off, Dave. Yeah. No, that'd be a neat. Really like to get the crossband set up. So I just take my HT around the house and the yard. Don't have to worry about holding it just right or the antenna in a certain spot or whatever to get into the repeater. That would be really handy. All right, let me see what I can do. I finally got the Linux distro installed. I wasn't able to do it on the box that I thought I'd try, but I have one problem after another. But anyway, I was finally able to get it. Now I just got to go through all the configuration, I guess, on it. Over.
Well, glad to hear you got it working on one, if not the other. And then once you get it up and running on one, you can go back to the other. It's a lot of fun. It gets very addictive. I got to give you a warning. The more I've got every old dusty laptop and desktop computer in the house brought back to life and crunching numbers, because it's kind of fun. And I think you're going to enjoy it once you get in there and get on the board and start crunching numbers. And you're going to help us find the cure to COVID.
Let you take one of these little small boxes and see if you can get it to install on it. You probably know a few more tricks than I do. I don't think I know any tricks for installing Linux. I'm glued to the instruction manual. Over.
Well, I do that too a lot. I don't think anybody knows everything about the operating system and all of the capabilities inside and out. Maybe Linus Torres. He's probably the only one. And it's probably overwhelmed his, because he wrote a tiny kernel. But, yeah, now it's the most used operating system on the planet. But my next venture is getting a Pi cluster up and running. So I'm doing a bunch of research on what I want to use, watching YouTube videos, and a lot of time that's what you can do. If you've got a piece of hardware and it's not working, go to YouTube and see if somebody else has already been beating their head against the wall long enough to where they had a breakthrough on it. That's what I usually do. I get a lot off of YouTube and forums, right? You can also read through the forums. They help tremendously. But I'm trying to figure out a cluster now and trying to decide which software I want to run on the cluster that distributes the workload to the worker bees. But anyway, it's a lot of fun. It's something to do. Keeps your mind off being on lockdown. W4DJW. I won't hold you up. I know you're wanting to get back to something else. But anyway, I'll let you go, Warren. Good talking to you. And if you're still listening, Jerry, enjoy the QSO. W4DJW. Hey, John, how did you guys turn out last night, W4DJW?
It all came down in the basement. Everybody was reasonably happy, except the cats. They didn't particularly care for it, but trying to get the one cat in the box, she put a nice gash in the palm of my hand between my pinky finger and the next finger over, and that's a little sore. But other than that, we survived.
Well, that's good. Cats can do that. That's part of having cats. You have cats, that's going to happen, unless you cut their claws out. I don't do that. Anyway, I'm glad you guys didn't get. I think Steve came out of it pretty good too, all things considered. Have you looked at the WYFF videos on the devastation over in Taylor's?
I hadn't seen anything on that. I'll probably watch it on the news this evening. But did Steve say whether or not he got any dents in his truck? I know he was trying to look at it, but he couldn't tell because it was dark and it was wet.
Yeah, he did. No broken glass and 3 dents, I think, is what I counted when he was talking about it. And not really big dents that you can pull out with a dent puller. So I think he came out of it pretty good. No tower damage or anything like that.
See the hail here that apparently they got in Inman. Of course, I'm just a little bit outside of Inman, but I mean, we got something like pea size, and it works. Worked with my wife. They're good friends, and she reported small egg-sized hail, so we didn't get anywhere near that here.
I think that's what Steve saw. He sent me a picture of it, and it looked like the size of an egg or a golf ball or something like that. But here we got pea-sized hail. I was in here doing something, and Amy says, "I know that's hail." So I went and looked out the window, got the flashlight, and sure enough, looking down on the porch roof, you could see hail popping up, you know, bouncing off the roof. But it was just pea-sized hail, so nothing serious here. I think we came out on the good end of the deal.
The storm followed a straight line from Steve to Inman, and what he got is what they got. But I'm about a mile and a half, east of him. Or east or south, I forget. Anyway, I'm about a mile and a half from him, and we didn't get anything that he was describing.
Well, that's good, but you can never be too safe. I'm glad you guys were all down in the basement being safe anyway. It didn't, what portion of it did come over us, it didn't last but about 7 minutes, and it was all done. from the time it hit to the time it was gone, and you could see, you know, blue in the sky was about 7 minutes. From dark to blue in the sky in 7 minutes.
Funny blue sky, but I got a piece of what went over you apparently, and it lasted about 2 minutes. And next thing I know, there's no wind and there's just a light drizzle of rain, but it was coming down fairly good there for a little bit.
Yeah, those were fast moving. They got some really good aerial footage on WYFF, so be sure and catch that. It did a major damage to a lot of places, a lot of houses, a lot of big houses with big trees cutting through the house. They show footage of people up on the roof with their chainsaws. You can see the sawdust all over the roof of the house where they've been cutting up trees to get the trees off the roof. And those little bobcats, you know, picking up sections of log that were really big, really big sections of log in diameter. So some old trees knocked over, a lot of them.
Yeah, that last big storm that hit Seneca pretty hard, we got some rain out of the deal and some pretty heavy wind, which blew straight at the house and actually hopped under the porch over the top of the front door, found a crack, and we had water cascading down the front, down the inside of the front door. But we didn't, you know, I had a lot of sticks to pick up out of the yard, but we didn't lose any trees and we didn't have any damage to the house. So I'd say we're...
Well, I'm glad you did good. Were you going to say something else?
Listen to your conversation with the other fellow about the satellites, and that sounds interesting to me. I've actually got a satellite tracker on my phone for when I get my telescope out, and I've got one telescope that does, in fact, track, you know, moons and that sort of thing. I don't know if I can jury-rig that thing to track a satellite or not, but I've watched the, can't think of the name of them. There's a collection of them up in orbit that are they use for communications that are basically a big silver box, and when they turn just right, they bounce sunlight off of them, and they're up for just a few seconds. They're the brightest thing in the sky. You can watch them flare. I can't think of the name of them off the top of my head.
I'm trying to think of the name of them, too. I know what you're talking about. It starts with an R, like radian or radian or something like that.
Started with an I, like iris or iridium. Iridium, so that's what it is. Iridium.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was one of those. That was a failed experiment for satellite telephone, right? But they're still up there, and amateur radio operators still use them.
There's like 80 or 90 of the things floating around up there, and I used to track them to watch them flare. But when I had my telescope out when doing stuff, but I think I've still got that app on my phone. But I also can track the ISS and a number of other satellites. But until I got into radio, I've never actually tried to talk to them. I might have to do that.
That is a lot of fun. You'll enjoy that. And there's some really nice satellite tracking software that runs on computers and I think on your phone, too. I had the Linux version of it, and that's what I would use for my antenna tracker because it would download. I pre-download all the paths that were coming up for the next 2 or 3 days, and then I would sort them. I'd load them all up into memory, their path, and what time they come up on the horizon, and then I just have the next one that was coming. So I'd sort them in a list, and then the one that was at the top of the list, I would change the X and Y axis to point at where it was going to come up over the horizon and wait for it. And then as it was going, after I tracked it all the way across the, you know, up and over, I'd look in the list and pull the next one up off the list that was going to come over and then position for it and wait for it to come over. And that way you could just hook a radio up. And that software will also control your radio. I had it controlling a TS-2000. It'll control it, and it'll do Doppler shift for you. So it draws a picture of the Earth, and it puts a circle on the Earth for what that thing's footprint is like, where its footprint is, how big it is, and what that area is. And then it puts a pin where you are on the ground. So you know if it's just clipping the, if you're just clipping the edge of the footprint, which means it's just going to come up off of the horizon, go back down the horizon, and it's only going to be there for a few seconds, versus if its shadow is going right across the center of your where you are, you know this is going to be one that comes straight up over the horizon, goes straight up overhead, and straight down the other side. So it's pretty good software. Once you get used to using it, you'll like it.
Similar to that on my phone, the ISS, by the way, is off the coast of California right now, off the coast of Baja, actually out in the Pacific there. But yeah, I track the ISS, the Iridium satellites. I've got planetary software on my computer. I take that out with my telescope, so I know where I want to look. I've got one telescope. I haven't gotten it out in like for ages, but it's actually got a tracker on it. It just takes too long to set up. You know, if you just want to look for, you know, 20, 30 minutes, I'd pull out the big dob for that. But yeah, I'm familiar with a lot of that software.
So that's one of the things. So I had three reasons for wanting an antenna tracker. One was for a telescope to be able to track the planets, right? Just have it go out there and point to the planet, and then me just be able to watch. And because, you know, I'm sure you know, when you line up on Saturn with your telescope, you got to keep moving it, because that thing, it doesn't stay still. That thing keep, well, Earth is rotating, so you're actually the one that's moving, but it's moving too. But you got to track it, or it'll just go right off the screen, or the viewer, right? So that's one reason. Another was for being able to fly multirotors at a distance and keep your signal with a Yagi pointed at it, no matter whether it was to the left of you, to the right of you, overhead. So I wanted it for that. And then satellite tracking for amateur radio. So I built that one antenna tracker for that purpose, for those three different functions. And I've only used it for satellite tracking. I haven't used it for airplanes yet, or multirotors, but I'll do that one day once I get off of this other – once. I'm getting cranked up on distributed computing now, and it's hard to – that's a hard habit to break. That's kind of like smoking or drinking, W4DJW.
Two computers running right now on the COVID thing, and I'm working on this one computer trying to get some software off of the thing so that I can it'll have enough space on it to actually download something and do something. And then I've got that other computer. I never could get that thing to boot up. It just will not turn over. I plugged it in. I put a battery in it, plugged it in, couldn't get it. I had it, took the battery out and just, you know, straight wired it to power. And when you flip the switch in the front, there's a little red light shows it's plugged in. And then when you turn the switch, the little light turns green, indicating that it's about to come on. And the little green light flickers a little bit, and then it goes back to red. So there's either a problem with the power supply in there, or the processor shot, or something. I'm not sure what's the matter with it.
Yeah, that can be a hard one to track down. That might be more trouble than it's worth. You might be better off to get a $45 Raspberry Pi. They do pretty good. Pi 4 with 4 gigs of RAM. They're outrunning my old laptops. They're producing more than my laptops were producing.
What is there a brand name, a model number, or something, or just a Raspberry Pi?
So there's a lot of people that have tried to copy it because it's so successful. I mean, there's like 30 million of those things that were sold, and it's built by a British company in the UK, and it was originally built for students that were on a budget. That they wanted to break through that price barrier for them to be able to learn how to write software. And they actually did it. They did a fantastic job of it, because for $40 you get a full-blown, or $45 you get a full-blown computer, right? You can get the Pi Zeros. So there's different models, but there's only one Raspberry Pi. There's an Atomic Pi. There's a Rock Pi. Those are all copycats, right, of single-board computers. But there's only one Raspberry Pi. And the Raspberry Pi has several models. It's got a Model 0, which is half the size of a credit card. And you can do stuff with it, but you couldn't crunch DC numbers with it. It doesn't have enough processor, and it only has Wi-Fi connectivity. It doesn't have Ethernet connectivity. And then the next step up is the progression of Pis over the years. Started off with a Pi 1, 2, 3, and now they're at a 4, Pi 4. And Pi 4 comes in four flavors, 1 gig of RAM, 2 gigs of RAM, 3 gigs of RAM, or 4 gigs of RAM. So it's a Raspberry Pi with, and if you're going to do distributed computing, you'll need all 4 gigs of RAM. Raspberry Pi 4 with 4 gigs of RAM. Google that and you'll get tons of information on it.
Well, I may take, if the hard drive in this computer that I can't get to boot is still usable, I may take the hard drive out of that, and then I'll have two spare hard drives. If I can hook them up to a Pi and get that to crunch, and I should have enough room to do stuff.
That's true. That's the weak point of a Raspberry Pi, if it's got a weak point at all, is that it runs on an SD card, a micro SD card, the size of your little fingernail, right? The little tiny cards. And in the past, they've had limited quantities of reads and writes. But the research that I've been doing lately is they're breaking through that barrier, like 10 years for a normal user. Now, if you're crunching numbers like we are, you probably 1 year is equivalent to 10 years because you're just constantly writing to the disk because they're gigabyte files that they're writing. But I get a 32 or 64 gigabyte micro SD card, and that's what I put in there. If I'm going to do something that needs, like when I built the repeater and the Echo Link node on a Raspberry Pi, I did use an SD hard drive like you're talking about that came out of a laptop, the half-size solid-state hard drives. I've even got rotating ones that work really good. Takes a little bit more work to get it to boot and use those. The Pi 3 is capable of booting directly off of that. The Pi 4 is not. They changed the way the Pi 4 boots, and it's booted from an EEPROM, and that EEPROM is hardwired to the SD card, so that you can't boot directly off of a hard drive, but you can boot from an SD card and then run off of the hard drive, which is what I'm doing on the ones that I want to last a long time. My next step is for the Pi cluster is to boot off of the SD card to the network, so it downloads its operating system through the network and then comes up the rest of the way after booting, and then it doesn't use the SD card until the next time you boot. But that'll give you an idea of you can do that, just takes a little bit more work, W4DJW.
I'm going to have to invest in some hardware and then get you on the horn and let you talk me through how to put all this together. But like I said, right now I've got two computers running, and if I can get enough extraneous software off this one, this thing can't even find my Wi-Fi, and I'm like 3 feet away from it. So I've got to play with this one here and see if I can get it to cooperate with me, and then I may have to take that other one apart and see what I can salvage.
Well, have you looked out there on the stats? Remember when we were talking to Glenn a week ago, and he said, and he might be listening, he said, I think I could find one or two computers to get up and running on that. Well, I just now pulled up his stats. He's got 10 computers crunching for COVID. This stuff is like alcohol or cigarettes. It's a bad habit, but it's a lot of fun.
Stats lately, the only thing I see is, you know, my own stats here. I'm at 16,000 change based on the snapshot this one took, and I'm not sure what the other one's at, but I think it's a little behind me. But if I can get this third one going, and then the one that my granddaughter uses upstairs for schoolwork, I loaded it down on that, but that's been shut down. I need to bring that back up and get that cranking because she's not using it today at all. And make me some more feet to elevate these things so I can get airflow underneath them. The one sitting in the windowsill over there isn't too terribly warm, but I'm a little concerned about him, so I'm going to elevate him so I can get some airflow underneath that, and the rest of them are fine, but yeah.
Yeah, it'll It'll consume all the computers in your house if you let it. Anyway, I'm going back out. I'm over here studying a YouTube video on pie clusters. That's what I want to build next. I think that'll be a lot of fun. I've been wanting to do that anyway, so might as well try it out. Anyway, I'm going to get back to that. Good talking to you, John. Glad you guys are safe. KN4RJN, W4DJW.
Roger that. Well, have a good afternoon, KN4RJN. I am clear.